A new poll says Jacksonville does not want the Republican convention. Should the city issue a mandatory mask ordinance? And it's a back-to-school plan for parents and kids in the time of COVID. Some of the stories making headlines this week. Good Friday morning and live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, all of the top stories of the week with our Friday roundtable. You can join us. It's 549-2937. Then later, a look at what could be a brand new chapter for Jacksonville's long-struggling Regency Mall. Karen Mathis has that story. But first this hour, yet another busy week in the news as we welcome Nate Monroe from the Florida Times-Union. Hi, Nate. Oh, we'll have Nate in a minute. Regular contributor Charles Griggs is here. Good morning, Charles.
Good morning, Melissa.
Hi, Charles. Journalist Claire Goforth also with us. Good morning, Claire.
Good morning.
And WJCT digital editor Bill Bortsfield.
Good morning, Melissa. Good morning, everybody.
Good morning, Bill. And we do have Nate Monroe as well. Hi, Nate. Good to see you.
Yes. Sorry, my mic was muted.
And no problem. We're all inhabiting this brave new world of digitally connecting rather than in person here in the studio, which is actually driving our whole discussion today. Let's begin with the latest on the COVID crisis by the numbers. Statewide, the Department of Health reports 114,000 plus cases of COVID and a little over 3,300 deaths. In our area, we have about 5,300 cases and 115 deaths. In light of these numbers, which are spiking, it's honestly no surprise that a UNF poll out this week finds nearly 60% of Jacksonville residents oppose this city hosting the Republican National Convention in August. Voters say they're concerned about spreading the virus and also about social unrest. We're going to begin with a closer look at these numbers and your calls. It's 549-2937. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. Charles Griggs, let's start with you. There was a lot to go over in this poll, but the big finding was that the majority of voters out there really do not like the plans for the RNC coming here. They're worried about getting COVID.
Yeah, Melissa, not only that, people are concerned about the prep time that this whole piece is laid out. You know that events like this takes years to plan, and overlay that with the concerns of an emerging outbreak and pandemic. But many people find it difficult. How are we going to keep the community safe under these circumstances? But I tell you what, much like what the Democratic Party did, they had the same concerns of Milwaukee. You know, some people are saying that hopefully they think that the Republican Party will maybe take a step back and look at the numbers, look at the data, and let that lead into perhaps change course or at least put some more precautions in place to protect not only the public here in Jacksonville, but those people who would be traveling to and from this community to attend the conference.
That's right. And the city is getting its share of unwelcome national attention over these concerns. Here's an ad that recently aired on Jimmy Kimmel, and that it's a parody ad, of course, and it's been making the rounds on social media. Take a listen.
Want to keep America great? Join us in Jacksonville for the 2020 Republican National Convention with all your favorite stars and no social distancing. Monday, August 24th, we're packing in more mouth-breathing deplorables than ever before. And we're turning off the ventilation. How do you like that, libtards? Hungry? Take an overcrowded elevator to the grab-and-go Bear Hands Buffet. No napkins, no sneeze guards, no utensils allowed. Dig up a handful of shrimp and say, fork you. The RNC convention in Jacksonville. The excitement is contagious.
Must be over 18. Void where prohibited. No shirt, no shoes, no problem. Not responsible for what happens 2 weeks later.
All right, Nate Monroe, it's a joke, but you know what? It hits a little close to home, doesn't it?
You know, I've always been skeptical that these kind of big, kind of large-scale events really put the city on a pedestal the way that, these kind of economic development types claim. You know, a convention, the only reason people would have to know where, other than like political junkies, the only reason people would know where a convention took place in a city is if something went wrong or if there was some sort of an embarrassment associated with it. And, you know, we're already seeing that because we're one of the only cities that was foolish enough to pursue this event. So Jacksonville is now part of the story, and it's not been part of the story in a good way.
Yeah, Claire Goforth, we learned this week as well that the Trump campaign, they were disappointed with the poor attendance they had at the president's rally the other day in Tulsa, Oklahoma. They're worried about the Jacksonville event, but they, according to reporting in Politico, they plan to blame the Jacksonville host committee if anything goes wrong with this event. And there, and attendees at Vistar Arena may be forced to sign a waiver before they enter the convention hall, giving the campaign no liability for anyone who contracts COVID.
Yeah, and there's no surprise there. I mean, that is exactly what the Trump campaign did in Tulsa. I think that the campaign is extremely committed to having as many people pack into Vistar Veterans Memorial Arena as possible in August. And the local population is just going to suffer the consequences. I mean, we have people from all over the country coming here, and many of them will be likely spreading COVID among us. So I was not surprised by the outcome of the poll that UNF did. And I do not think that the Trump campaign is willing in the slightest to back off of having that big splashy speech. We know that's what they love. So we're just going to have to sit here and hope that maybe something will change, but I really don't think it will.
Bill Bortsfield, you've been reporting on this at WJCT.org. We are hearing from local officials that they will make an effort to reduce the spread of COVID at this event in terms of encouraging mask wearing, sanitizing, and social distancing, correct?
Yes, but you have to wonder how that's going to play out with the Republican Party, given that President Trump has made it very clear he wants to take crowd. We've done one a lot of limitations. So I do wonder if the Florida Republicans and the National Party and the president will be at odds over this when the time comes. Because as we all know, at this point, the numbers are clearly going in the wrong direction and show no indication of slowing down between now and the August convention.
That's absolutely right. And we continue to see more and more cars each day outside the downtown Lot J COVID testing site. If you're just tuning in, it's our Friday Media Roundtable. And also making headlines this week, Jacksonville Mayor Lenny Curry said he will not call for a citywide mask ordinance to slow the spread of COVID. Now, Curry is an outlier in Florida. All of the state's other big city mayors are now mandating masks in public. Here's the mayor.
We do not need to have law enforcement out in public enforcing this. It's not an efficient use of resources, and we're not going to prosecute people, start prosecuting people, ticketing people, and arresting people because they choose not to wear a mask.
We spoke on this show yesterday with retired Baptist Health CEO Hugh Green. He publicly called for the mayor to change his mind and issue the ordinance. Listen here.
I see no reason not to do that, to protect people. We're here to protect the health and safety of the people of this community, and we know masks make a difference in the community spread.
And amidst all of that, the state's Agriculture Commissioner Nikki Fried publicly encouraged Governor Ron DeSantis to follow the lead of some other states and issue a statewide mask ordinance. Here's Fried.
Everybody should be wearing masks. You know, we all know that the masks are not going to stop the spread, but it certainly will slow it down. We also need to reinforce that COVID is not behind us. So everybody needs to stay vigilant. Everybody needs to continue having social distancing.
So here's a question for callers. Do you think the mayor of Jacksonville, Lenny Curry, should issue a citywide mask ordinance? Give us a call on that at 549-2937. Charles Griggs, Mayor Curry is standing alone now among Florida mayors on this. Okay, we're having a little trouble getting Charles connected. Let's go to Claire. Claire.
Hello.
There you go, Charles.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Mayor Curry is standing alone on this in terms of being a holdout and not mandating the wearing of masks in public.
Yeah, and it's like your guest, like Hugh Green mentioned yesterday, there's really no reason to not to mandate this. Typically under conditions where we have a public health outbreak or a pandemic in this case, most of the decision-making are led by health professionals. And I would hate to imagine that health professionals under these circumstances aren't advising people to, you know, to have more stringent cautions on the public. It would seem to me that if the medical community is calling for tougher practices, such as more social distancing and the mandate for mask wearing, that should come from the top as well. But as the numbers continue to rise, this community is going to be forced in a position where it's not going to have any other choice but to take some type of mandates around how to mitigate the spread of this virus, because there's so many unknowns still out there regarding it. So I know that people are eager to get back to work and restaurants and bars are eager to be open, but at the same time, we're not really at this point following all of the rules that we could to help mitigate the spread of this virus.
Thanks for that, Charles. Now, Nate Monroe, what Mayor Curry has done is he's called for city code enforcement to crack down on local businesses that aren't following the rules about capacity guidelines. In particular, restaurants and bars are limited to 50% indoor capacity right now. Is that enough?
Probably not. There is a real transparency problem here. The mayor talks about hospitalizations being this very important metric that he watches, but the city and the hospitals will not release hospitalization data. So we not only don't have access to the hospitalization data, the mayor also has not laid out like what the metrics need to be. When we talk about this in the context of the RNC, for example, and the mayor says we're going to be safe and we'll see what the conditions on the ground are like in August, what do the conditions need to look like in August? What level of spread triggers what kinds of safety measures? Like, we have no idea what those benchmarks are. You know, we have no access to this data. It runs counter to everything that certainly journalists are taught about verifying information that we're being given. And it just seems like it's built to undermine trust in City Hall.
We have had a hard time getting data. Claire Goforth, that's the story, really, not just for Jacksonville, but also for Florida.
Yeah, it seems as though their strategy right now is to hide the information from us so that we can't really get a clear picture of what's going on, because their perception is that the less we know, the more positive we'll feel about what's happening. And maybe that's true, but I would say that that UNF poll kind of indicates that people are highly skeptical. Mayor Lenny Curry's approval rating was falling, and most believe it's because in the beginning of the pandemic, he was one of the mayors who he took a fairly strong stance, which surprised many. And now it seems to have utterly backed off of that. I mean, what sense does it make that we have the police force to go out and tell businesses they need to kick people out of the bar or out of the restaurant or whatever it is, but we can't have them maybe warning people when they're not wearing masks? I mean, I think of it along the lines of speeding. I mean, there are speeding signs posted everywhere, and it's a very minor thing that most of the time you get a warning the first time. And just the fact of knowing that there's enforcement encourages you to drive below the speed limit.
We should note
that, you were more likely to obey that rule.
We should note that yesterday UNF sent out a directive saying that they are now mandating the wearing of masks on UNF's campus. Here's an email we've just received from a professor at UNF. He writes, "My colleagues have heard that some RNC events may be coming to campus. We are starting a petition to block any RNC events at UNF. This is as unpopular on campus as the idea of having the president deliver his speech downtown." And so, Bill Bortsfield, a number of corporations and now the largest university in the area are mandating the wearing of masks. So there is certainly pressure on the mayor's office here.
There is. In fact, if we look at our city just to the south of us, St. Augustine, they're going to be taking up a resolution that would make mask wearing mandatory a little bit later this morning. If that resolution passes, St. Augustine is also going to have a fine in place for up to $500 for violators. And of course, there's a city that really depends on tourism year round, not just for special events such as this one. So no question about it. Our sister cities around the state, even if the state doesn't do it, we're finding more and more examples of county and municipalities that are looking at mandatory mask wearing.
Let us know what you think. First Coast, should Jacksonville mandate masks in public? 549-2937. Kathy in Ponte Vedra. Hi, Kathy. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. Thanks for taking the call. I am a progressive Democrat who has never been a Lenny Curry fan, but I found in the initial start of the pandemic that I was really impressed by his daily briefings and by his strength and leadership, which was so lacking throughout the country. But this turn of events with the RNC first and now with refusing to allow masks really is a great disappointment in him and what I thought might be a person of integrity and character.
Kathy, thanks for that. Charles Griggs, two things there. First, a progressive Democrat calling from Ponte Vedra is always interesting. and number two, it must be pointed out that Mayor Curry got universal plaudits across the board at the start of this pandemic for really getting out in front of it, encouraging testing, modeling the wearing of masks, constantly preaching about social distancing. He really did act in such a proactive way. And so now the political headwinds have turned because of the RNC coming to town and because he's dragging his feet on doing really what every public health expert says needs to be done to really cut this virus off at the knees, which is get everyone to mask up.
Yeah, make no mistake. I think in the beginning, people were very much encouraged and happy with the decisions that were being made by the administration and the mayor, how they were keeping everyone informed, how all of the decisions were coming down. Even in the face of all of that, the public was believing in the transparency. But when the opportunity, it appears that when the opportunity came in to host the RNC conference, all of that strategy sort of went out the window. We're now looking at decisions now where the public doesn't feel confident in it because the numbers keep going up. We see the rise in the confirmed cases, and the rationale for some of the steps that are being taken now with in particular the non-mandate for mask wearing is something that people find curious in the light of the fact that we have so many rises in cases. But over time, just a few more weeks, I think in a couple of weeks, we're going to find out what this administration is made of, whether it's going to be more beholden to the people in the Republican Party related to the conference or the people in the community who are asking for more mandates to help protect the public.
Sarah in San Marco. Hi, Sarah. Thanks for holding. Go ahead, Sarah.
The progressive Democrat from Ponte Vedra took the words right out of my mouth. I totally agree with what she said. I was impressed with the mayor's handling of situation early on, but now I'm extremely disappointed. And the difference is I'm not calling from Ponte Vedra. I'm calling from San Marco.
Okay. Thank you, Sarah. Lots of calls. Margaret on the South Side. Hello, Margaret.
Hi, yes, I've been waiting.
Yeah, you're on the air. Go ahead, Margaret.
Oh, hello, yes. I want to know where I can sign a petition to stop the convention from coming to Jacksonville.
Margaret, thanks. There's been a petition up at the website change.org for several weeks. And, that's a way for people to express their views on stuff like this. But Nate Monroe, that certainly didn't have any real impact on the decision making. The event is coming.
Yeah, it was a unilateral decision. There was no community input on this whatsoever. So like a lot of big things that have happened or have been attempted the past few years, this was a top-down decision. And whether you like it or not, it's like too bad. Horse is out the barn now, and what's going to happen is going to happen.
And Bill Bordsfield, Claire and Bill, what about that? The city council was not involved in this decision, and legally they didn't have to be, but should they have been?
I mean, I think when you say should, you're talking opinion. As a journalist, I try not to get into that, but Nate's absolutely right. they were not involved. There were no public hearings on this. There was no city council on this. There were no resolutions passed through city council. No one, there was nothing like that. I mean, basically, we heard one day that we were getting the convention. As we all know, it started with a couple of tweets. The mayor and the governor both were supportive of the idea. This, as Nate said, was top down.
Claire.
Yeah, and some folks may like the strong mayor system when, for instance, Lenny Curry decides to remove all of the Confederate monuments. But when he decides to bring thousands of people to Jacksonville to pack them all into an arena where the president wants as many people as possible to be in there so he has his big photo op, then we question the strong mayor system. I mean, we're really looking at what our government, how our government functions right now, and whether or not we think that one person can unilaterally make a decision that could affect the health of all of us. It's a really interesting question.
Charles, what about the argument for the event, in particular the economic benefits that we have been told the city will enjoy?
Well, that's fine. I don't think anyone would argue with trying to bring an event to town that is going to provide opportunity and jobs and all of that. However, the conditions as such doesn't really invite that. What we've seen across the board for not just the RNC or DHC, we've seen companies, organizations across the country cancel their events in the name of safety, period. You know, no one's doing anything. Everyone's hosting virtual conferences. I've seen and I've talked with various organizations, nonprofits and professional organizations. All of them have decided in the name of safety that they are not producing these large convention-type events. And I think what really bothers people is that even in the face of all of that, that we are, Jacksonville has been, frantically pursuing this event, with the non-encouragement of the local community. So that's what really bothers people, especially in the name of safety, when we know that we're in the middle of a pandemic that no one's able to predict where it's going. We've seen cases go up. We've sort of changed the mentality of what's important about the data regarding what we're looking for, whether it's hospital beds or ICU or confirmed cases. All of that information matters, and like Nate pointed out earlier, there is a lack of transparency here, but we don't know. It's very difficult to draw your own conclusions about what's really going on here based on the information we're getting.
Yeah.
The public wants to know, what are our chances of surviving this and coming through this pandemic?
And the public should know that all of the local media outlets are trying to get updated numbers from the city and from local hospitals. We have not been able to always get all the data we're seeking. Nate, at the same time that Jacksonville is taking heat over its plans for this convention, we should point out that the city of Milwaukee, which will be hosting the Democratic convention, will be putting on a very different type of affair. It will be mostly virtual. Delegates for the Dems are being told to stay home, not to travel to Wisconsin. Even with all of that, up in Milwaukee, there's a lot of unrest and concern about their city having a convention, but it will be a very different kind of event.
Look, I think one of the most remarkable findings in the UNF poll this week is that a majority of people, something like 66% of the respondents, were willing to agree with the statement that the RNC could have $100 million economic benefit to the city, which, by the way, is totally dubious number, probably way overestimates it. But most people were willing to believe that. And regardless, most people don't want the RNC here. I think that shows that people are more concerned about their health, the health of their relatives and their neighbors and their friends than, this sort of short-lived economic bump that a convention might bring. And again, there was no community input on this. And the mayor's office has tried to wrap this whole effort in this kind of nonpartisan, it is all about economic development. And, you look at the members of the host committee, it just feels extremely disingenuous. The host committee is filled with Republican busybodies from all around the state, people who have nothing to do with Jacksonville, who could not care one way or another about whether Jacksonville thrives or not. They're just all Republicans.
Let me just ask you as well, what about the fact that two local African-American leaders in Jacksonville were named to the host committee, and they've backed out.
I was just going to say, I think it speaks to the fact that it's a partisan affair, and whatever, you know, those two guys might have agreed to be on it and maybe didn't realize the message it sends. But I mean, I think it's clear to the public, like, what's going on here.
Claire.
I think they got pressure to step down.
I actually saw a video that one of them did. I cannot remember the gentleman's name, but he was a pastor. And he said that he was actually quite surprised to see his name on that list, that he had declined to be named to the host committee, and that nevertheless, that he saw that he was on it and that he was looking to, I guess, get taken off of that that list. So, I mean, obviously, just like when Lenny Curry was first inaugurated, he did bring out a lot of African-American leaders to try to create that sense of unity. And in this instance, I think that effort, maybe it was forced, maybe it was not communicated clearly what was going on, but it's not going over very well with the people who are named to that list, is my sense of it.
Lots of calls, meanwhile, on our Friday roundtable. Rusty in Queens Harbor. Hi, Rusty.
Hi, good morning.
Go ahead.
Well, this is all very disturbing, the fact that in the midst of a pandemic, we have the RNC coming here. And like someone else, I believe, earlier said, people from everywhere bringing it and going to take it away with them as well. But my question, the venue that the event's being held in, is that a city-owned venue? And I would assume if it's city-owned, they manage it, possibly have it managed by elsewhere. And the second part is Lenny Curry the ultimate authority? Is there no recourse to what he's done here as a community if we have a majority of the community not wanting this to happen?
Rusty, thanks for the call. Yeah. Bill Bortsfield, to answer his first question, Vistar Arena is run by SMG, which manages a number of venues on behalf of the city of Jax. So technically, yes, it's a city joint.
Correct. Yeah. In fact, longtime residents will remember the arena was financed by the $2.2 billion Better Jacksonville plan. That's what got it built. And when you look at this convention, you know, you got to remember national politics are at play here. If you look at the two different conventions, the two parties have made very different calculated decisions. You know, as a former TV news producer myself, I know that what the Republicans are going for is going to be much more media friendly in a sense of the CNNs and the NBCs and, you know, the splashy video that politicians are looking for. And if you think about the arena, it is a relatively small venue. So even with less people on television, it is going to look better than conventions in the past. So, for example, back in the day when I lived in Houston and we had a convention at the Astrodome, well, obviously that was a totally different scale in the number of people that would be attending. Now, if you switch over to the Democratic side, as you've mentioned, they're talking about a very, very virtual convention. They're saying that official business, including the official vote to nominate Biden, will take place virtually, and they're asking delegates not to travel to Milwaukee. So to me, that shows that the two parties are both going in very different directions in what they think the public is ready for. In other words, the Democrats believe that people are very, very concerned about the pandemic, while Republicans seem to be taking the tack that the country wants to move forward with business in spite of the pandemic.
Right. But you know what, Charles, it was really revealing to see in the poll data UNF put out this week, a majority of Republicans, Democrats, and independents in Jacksonville are concerned about the impact of this event. It does not just fall along partisan lines altogether.
Yeah, and also, Melissa, to Bill's point, many people believe that these types of large convention events they're no longer even necessary. You know, we know that the two nominees are a foregone conclusion. There's not going to be any battle on the floor of who's going to get the nomination. So really, they're just looking to put on an event to have a national television presence and to get coverage, to Bill's point. So that can be done in different ways. The actual convention itself is really the way that politicians are at working now is really not necessary. No one is really going to, they're going to change anyone's mind on the convention floor by hosting a large event here in Jacksonville. But the problem with that is that it puts, it still, in the perception of many people, put the community at risk for a lot of people coming in and out of Jacksonville and being the town that has been, you know, pointed out to host this event.
Carol on the South Side. Hi, Carol.
Yeah, hi. I'm just calling in to weigh in on the mandating of face masks.
Yeah.
This is a no-brainer. Why aren't we doing this?
So you think it should be a mandate?
Absolutely, especially when we're taking a look at these events that are coming to the city. I'm out in public, and I'm looking, and I'm the minority wearing a face mask. This is not a partisan issue.
Thank you, Carol. You know, here's an email from Lisa in San Marco, Nate. She writes, I own a small retail business, and I've stopped ordering for the future because the mayor has not mandated mask wearing. I'm worried about having to close down again due to the unprecedented numbers of coronavirus cases. I usually place orders for Christmas by now, but I'm going to delay until the fall. So for business, Nate, this is a climate of uncertainty and worries that soon after reopening, they might have to shut down again.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's evidence that you can't just will the economy back into motion. You can't ignore the coronavirus out of existence. What's interesting is that, you know, conservatives in particular were very, sort of hair on fire about the economic shutdown, which, of course, it affected, almost everybody. No one wants the economy to shut down. But, you know, I feel like I kept hearing in March and April, you know, this kind of belly aching about maybe, you know, there's got to be some sort of way to reopen, but to do it safely. Well, here we are. We have a way that businesses can stay open, that we can do a lot to limit the spread of the virus, and have people out and about in the form of wearing masks. And now it's like this partisan issue where conservatives are really leery about mandating it. I mean, it's bizarre. Like, it's not very much to ask of people. It would be a very simple thing for the mayor to do. This concern about JSO's law enforcement resources being stretched is a total red herring. That is not an impediment to enforcing this. It's just bizarre.
Angela has some thoughts. Angela on the South Side. Go ahead, Angela.
Hi there. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, go right ahead.
Okay. You guys were also talking about, the mayor doesn't want to enforce this, how it's a waste of resources. But what that means is that the low-paid workers at the front lines are the ones that are now enforcing something that's putting them in a really awkward situation. I was at getting some blood work this morning, and a gentleman walked in, and they said, you have to wear a mask, and he started in, immediately got belligerent. I don't have to. I've already been told it's my choice. I don't want to wear a mask, and I'm not wearing one. And it was up to them to talk him down off the ledge, to escort him out, because he wouldn't wear a mask. And then a couple of patients later, somebody checked in and he didn't have a mask. And he said, I'm confused. I don't know when I need a mask and when I don't. So I don't carry one with me because I don't like to wear them. So how am I supposed to know if I go into one place, I have to wear it? If I go into some other place, I don't have to wear it. And it's causing all sorts of confusion and inconsistencies, and it's putting the onus on the wrong people to have confrontations with residents in Jacksonville. It's not right.
Angela, thanks for that. Eric has another view. Eric, also on the South Side. Hi, Eric. Good morning.
And happy Friday to
you
to
too.
I come from a 40-year background in public health, and I agree with the mayor. What are we going to do? Have community officers going out giving $500 fines like St. Augustine wants to do, and we're in an economic recession, if not a depression. It's not enforceable. And if what are we going to jail them and then have them exposed to more virus and settings and how they're going to get to court. You can't do this. I mean, we can't even solve. We can't even get.
Well, Eric, no offense, but a lot of cities. There are cities and there are states and other places around the country that have done it.
Done what, Melissa?
Mandated masks.
People, be specific. What are they doing specifically to enforce it?
I don't know how much they're enforcing it, just knowing that it's a mandate encourages more people to do it.
Well, then you're going to enforce it and drive them downtown to jail. You can't do all that, but it's up to the individual. Thanks, Melissa.
All right, Eric, thank you. Charles, what about Eric's argument?
Yeah, well, what we've seen in other countries where this wearing masks have been mandated, we've seen the spread of the disease be mitigated in some better than here in the U.S. And also, if you had a policy regarding a mandate of masks, then people who are like what the young lady just mentioned, put in that position where people on the front line were conflicting information, they would be able to say, hey, you can't come in here without a mask specifically. And the person would, actually have to, comply with that. So at the point of entry of a business, business owners would be armed with that information and they could use that to sort of police themselves and help the mandate work for betterment of mitigating the spread of the infection.
Claire Goforth, a number of states are looking at this. In South Carolina, the attorney general weighed in on this the other day. He said that it is legal to do this kind of mandate to empower local governments to call for universal mask wearing. The argument against this is that it violates people's constitutional rights. That said,
government requires me to wear certain articles of clothing when I'm in public, and I think that's constitutional. Some of those articles of clothing probably have a hygienic effect, correct? I mean, they can mandate us doing that. And like that previous caller said about the gentleman who was getting belligerent about the mask, I mean, think of this from the perspective of a business owner. Times have been hard, obviously, for everyone, and you want the business, and people start coming in. You want them to wear a mask because it's safer, but it's on you to tell them not to wear one. And what choice are you going to make? Are you going to choose to get the money because you need it, or are you going to choose to turn them away? And if the mayor had clearly said, or if the city council had passed some sort of legislation requiring a mask, it would be a lot easier for them to just say, oh, it's not me, it's the city, you got to wear that mask. And I mean, I think that is what people are really starting to say is necessary here.
Let's take one more call on this and then we'll move on. Sherry in Ponte Vedra. Hi, Sherry. Lots of Ponte Vedra callers today. Go ahead, Sherry.
Hi. Hi, good morning. I understand people saying it's not enforceable, but until it's a mandate, no matter what, you're always going to have people that don't want to do that, that refuse to do it. But we've been getting takeout all along. One of our favorite restaurants, we went in May. Everyone was wearing masks. I felt very good about being there. I just went back to the same restaurant on Sunday. This is in St. Augustine. It was packed. Everyone was about a foot or two apart. There were 20 people in a very small space, and not one of them, except for me, was wearing a mask. So I refuse to go back there now. They've lost my business. So, I called and spoke with an employee to voice my concern. And the employee was also concerned and was in a position where he wasn't able to do anything about it. He was stuck, with those circumstances without any recourse as an individual who's seeing hundreds of unmasked people a day.
All right, Sherry.
So that's my concern.
Thank you. Thanks for your opinion. Go ahead, Bill. Go ahead, Nate.
Yeah, just one point I want to make about, these people who just get hysterical about the mask mandate as if the difference between, a democracy and like Mad Max world is whether you have to wear a mask. We issue mandatory evacuation orders ahead of hurricanes, and no one complains about the ability of police officers to go around and arrest people for not leaving.
To be clear, they really don't do that. They just kind of tell you to leave.
No,
and if you don't, they just say, well, you're on your own.
Yeah, and it's the messaging. It's also the, look, if you stay, you're not going to have access to emergency services. You know, now, unfortunately, we can't cut off emergency services for people who don't wear masks. But, you know, there's kind of a similar concept here. I mean, it's about getting people in as high a proportion as possible to comply with a smart, you know, public health policy.
Right. Go ahead, Bill, because we're coming up against a break.
You know, I think one of the big arguments here is personal freedom. I think that folks that don't want to wear a mask would say, look, you're impinging upon my personal freedom. But, you know, people that don't wear a mask are impinging on my personal freedom to stay healthy. It really, if you think about it, there's a big similarity between this and what we saw years ago with cigarettes. When I was younger, for example, smoking was allowed across the board in restaurants. But as people learned more and more about the adverse health effects of secondhand smoke, it was gradually prohibited. So, you know, not because people were trying to take away a civil liberty, but rather they were trying to keep society as healthy as possible. So in other words, if I choose not to smoke, I should not have to have my health put at risk from secondhand smoke if I want to go out to eat. And if you think about it, the same is true of masks. I mean, we're wearing a mask to hopefully prevent the spread to the next person. And if I wear it, hopefully I'm protecting the person next to me to some extent. But if the person next to me isn't wearing one, then they're putting me at risk.
Very well put. And we don't have a lot of time left, but there's more about this on our website. Speaking of masks, social distancing, and planning around it, the Duval County Public Schools this week is reopening for the fall semester August 10th with a hybrid schedule for parents and kids, Charles. Without going into a lot of detail, we are sending the kids back, sort of. Mask wearing won't be universal in the schools either. So that didn't get as much attention as I had hoped today just because we got onto such a hot topic, but it is important to note.
Yeah, well, you got to give the superintendent credit and her team credit for being innovators. This is a very innovative and ambitious attempt at getting kids back to class and out of the homes of some of these parents who are have children's fatigue. But this is something that the district feels like they were informed by parents on, and they feel like it's something that'll work. And it's much like virtual learning, distance learning that was thrust upon them, almost overnight. This is going to have to be looked at over time to see how well it works. And if it works, we'll have something new on our hands that complements more innovative learning.
Yes. And I want to thank you all so much. Charles Griggs, Claire Goforth, Bill Bortsfield, and Nate Monroe all joining us from a distance. Thanks, guys, and have a great weekend.
Thank you, Melissa.
Thank you.
And in a moment.
It was built in 1967, and it was the first and largest regional indoor mall.
Karen Bruni Mathis on a potential new chapter for Jacksonville's Regency Mall. We'll be right back.
The Terrell Hogan Law Firm. Is your business suffering because of coronavirus? Your insurance policy may already provide coverage. Not sure how to tell? Learn more at terrellhogan.com.
One Florida Clinical Research Consortium invites essential workers in healthcare to join the HERO Registry and share how the COVID-19 pandemic has impacted their lives with researchers from the University of Florida and nationwide. Clinical and non-clinical personnel can register online to tell their story at heroesresearch.org, because the best way to thank healthcare heroes is to learn from them.
New Horizons, offering IT programs designed to start your career in 3 months. Federal funding may be available. More information at newhorizons-jax.com or 564-9500.
I'm Ira Flatto. This week on Science Friday, the tale of a man who can't see the numbers 2 through 9.
When he looks at a digit, it appears to him like spaghetti. It's just this tangled mess.
What can his experience teach us about the way we make sense of what we see? It's all on Science Friday from WNYC Studios.
Today at 3 on 89.9 WJCT.
AIDS said it was a joke.
So I said to my people, slow the testing down, please.
But this week, President Trump pulled federal funding from coronavirus test sites. As more than half of all states report a surge in outbreaks, has America given up? I'm Celeste Headlee. Join me for the Friday News Roundup next time on 1A.
Today at 10 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, after years of decline, there appears to be new life for Jacksonville's Regency Mall in Arlington. To learn more, I spoke about it with Karen Bruni Mathis, editor of the Jax Daily Record. Take a listen. Karen Bruni Mathis, good to talk to you.
Good to talk with you.
So tell us what you've uncovered about future plans for the Regency Mall.
A local development company, Rimrock Devlin, has a contract to buy the mall, and they have plans for a mixed-use project there, and that would include uses such as medical services, hotels, fulfillment centers, apartments, charter schools, banks, a convenience store, restaurants, and retail. It's a long list. But we don't know exactly what they're going to do with the space, but I wouldn't be surprised to see if they didn't do what others have done, and that is to take down some of the mall and repurpose it.
Hmm. So this will be fascinating to watch because, of course, the Regency Mall was one of the first real malls in the United States, and it has suffered the fate of almost every other mall around the country. It's declined. We've watched it go down before our very eyes. Do you think these developers can bring it back to life, reconstitute it?
I think the encouragement there, and I talked with the district council member, Joyce Morgan, is that this is a local group. And their offices are here, and so they have a lot of, as she said, skin in the game to make sure that that this works. And Rimrock does have a track record of development, and so that is encouraging. Mm-hmm. And also, the mall has really not done a lot since it was purchased by a group out of New York, and that was in 2014. And I think now it's down to about 30% occupancy, and that is just in the east half of the mall. So there's really nowhere to go but up.
Yeah, really. And, you know, this is something that I know you cover all the time, just the rise and fall of all of these types of businesses. This one is particularly meaningful for Jacksonville, though, isn't it? I mean, people have a lot of memories and associations with that particular mall.
Oh, they really do. You're so right. It was built in 1967, and it was the first and largest regional indoor mall. And we've read that it could be in the southeast, but we know for sure that it was in the region. And it really did bring together that Arlington community because Arlington was one of the city's first major suburbs. And that happened after the completion of the Matthews Bridge. And being the first major enclosed mall, it was the mall to go to at the time. It had a lot of new stores and a lot of the department stores. Some people say that is when downtown started to decline a little bit, when Regency started opening and bringing the anchor stores there. Those anchor stores were leaving downtown.
Hmm. And then, of course, with the St. John's Town Center, everything changed yet again. So this will be a new chapter, I guess. It'll be interesting to watch.
It will. And St. John's Town Center actually followed the avenues. And so when the avenues opened, you started seeing some of the retail trade kind of migrate from Regency to try out the newest, shiniest mall down in the avenues. And then when the town center opened as a complete open-air lifestyle center, that changed the dynamics yet again. And you see this happening all over the country.
Right. She's Karen Bruni Mathis, editor at the Jack's Daily Record. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
And finally, this hour, we started a new thing this week, What's Good Wednesdays. It's a brand new e-newsletter that myself and producer Heather Schatz sends out to listeners every Wednesday afternoon. And what we do is we focus on the good in this community. Yes, we're in a pandemic, we're in a recession, and things can get pretty scary sometimes. But what we're also seeing is the countless examples of people and organizations doing good things to help each other right now. And we decided we wanted to focus on that and give that news out to people and update them on what's going on that's good. And so if you want to sign up for our free e-newsletter, What's Good Wednesdays, just go to WJCT.org and look for the sign up on the right side of the page. This is something we will send out each week. Make sure it doesn't go into your promotions folder when you look for it. And if you have some good news you'd like us to serve up on our weekly menu, send it to us at firstcoastconnect@wjct.org so we can round it up in What's Good Wednesdays. Well, that's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Heather Schatz. Our main man, Josh Torres, is show director. Jessica Palumbo is the station news director. And Bill Bortsfield, who you heard earlier, is digital editor here at WJCT. Keep those emails coming to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. And make sure to tune into the Florida Roundup, our statewide live call-in show airing across Florida today at noon, where we look at coronavirus efforts all across the Sunshine State. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect on 89.9. This show will rebroadcast tonight at 8 o'clock. Catch it there or wherever you get your podcasts. And have a great weekend, everybody. Wear those masks.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.